Nice and thick fella. Did anybody need a highlighter? I have some up here. That's what these are for, yeah? RJ, is it?
Yeah.
If anybody needs a highlighter, I have some. Right here. It's full? Oh, how funny. Oh, so I'm like, so everybody got full during lunch. Everybody got drunk during lunch? I hope not. Let's all start out with the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. All righty. See where we're going to go from here. There's so much again in the book to be able. It's not a big book study. Just want to let you know that so that we didn't necessarily break down the book at that level. It's a step study. Right, because if we get into the book, I've been doing a big book study now for 3 years, and we just started Chapter to the Wives. We've been doing it for 3 years. We do paragraph from paragraph, line by line, word by word. That takes a minute. So please take a moment, you know, from hereafter and take a look at doctor's opinion and more about alcoholism, and there's a solution, and Bill's story to kind of really see where step one plays a role in all those areas. And where we can identify with that. Because now once I've come in this place of admitting that I'm powerless over alcohol and my life is unmanageable, where do we go from here? What am I supposed to do now? I'm admitting complete defeat. Now what am I left with? And it tells me that that's the place that I find freedom, right? That's the bedrock from which I stand. I always learn that the answer to one step is in the next step. The answer to step one is in two. It has to be. Because in one, I'm powerless and my life is unmanageable. I gotta go to two. I can't stay there. There's no way I can stay on one. The only way I can stay on one is if I'm still confused. Because once I found out that I am truly powerless, and my life is unmanageable, that I have this allergy and this obsession, I've got nowhere else to go but to. Nowhere else to go. And it's okay if you don't get it. If you're still on one trying to decide whether you're an alcoholic or not, that is the beauty of this program, that the only requirement is a desire. No one says that you have to be here not drinking and that you have to know that you're an alcoholic. It's just to have a desire because we get to have our own experiences with that. And equipped with this information, the more we still, they say, keep coming back. Still learn what you need to learn. Take in the information and then go back out there. They said, alcohol is our greatest advocate. I don't need to convince you. It's not my job. But you keep going out there and you keep doing some controlled drink and eventually you're going to find out that just maybe these people know what they're talking about. You go back out there and you actually witness the phenomenon of craving. And you see the allergy within yourself. And you go, uh-oh, maybe they're right. Those people might just know what they're talking about. Tells me that I suffer from a spiritual malady. And they talk about the psychic change. To have a spiritual experience. Therefore, now they're indicating something that has to do with spirituality. If I am powerless and something else out there must be greater than me, what is that? Where do we find that? I like in Bill's story. I'm going to get it. When Ebby comes to see him. Hold on. On page 8. Huh? My schoolmate visited me. You guys have page 8 Bill's story?
Yeah, it's really more like page 15.
Let me see.
I think it's no, it's like 8.
It is 8. It is 8. Page 8. It's 8 in the 4th and in the 3rd.
But in the Swedish book, it's page 30.
Oh, okay. Page 30 if you have the Swedish big book.
No, in the 35 or something.
Second to the bottom of that paragraph, it says, near the end of that break, November, I sat drinking in my kitchen with a certain satisfaction. I reflected there was enough gin concealed about the house to carry me through that night and the next day. My wife was at work. I wondered whether I dared hide a full bottle of gin near the head of our bed. I would need it before daylight. My musing was interrupted by the telephone, and a cheery voice of an old friend asked me if he might come over. He was sober. It was years since I could remember his coming to New York in that condition. I was amazed. Rumor had it that he had been committed for alcoholic insanity. I wonder how he had escaped. Of course, he would have dinner, and then I could drink openly with him. Unmindful of his welfare, I thought only of recapturing the spirit of other days. Mm-hmm. There was the time that we had chartered an airplane to complete a jag. His coming was an oasis in this dreary desert of futility. The very thing, an oasis. Drinkers are like that. We're looking for the oasis. I want the good old days. My drinking buddy. The door opened. He stood there, fresh skin and glowing. There was something about his eyes. He was inexplicably different. What had happened? What's inexplicably?
Inexplicably.
I can't even say it.
Where's that word?
Inexplicably.
Oh, no, where is it?
There was something about his eyes. He was inexplicably different.
Second paragraph.
Inexplicable. That cannot be explained.
That cannot be explained. It could not. There was something different. We're talking about Ebby. Ebby Thatcher is coming to visit Bill. And he opens up the door. And here stood fresh skin and glowing. There was something about his eyes. This is my old drinking buddy. I'm looking for the oasis. I'm thinking about the time where we can just drink again and be merry. And here he shows up, fresh skin and glowing. There was something about his eyes, and he was inexplicably different. Unexplainable. There's an unexplainable difference about him. What had happened? Bill's interested now. He's asking himself, what happened? What's going on with this guy? I pushed a drink across the table and he refused it. Disappointed, but curious. I wondered what had got into this fellow. He wasn't himself. That's what happens to us in the rooms. We're going to talk about step 2. Step 2 says, came to believe in a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Could. How does that happen? The doctor talked about depth and weight. We come into the rooms and we see these people. And I know for me, there was something about their eyes. They had a fresh glow about them. People who said they drank like me. I see this camaraderie with one another, and everyone's laughing, and they seem happy and fresh. It's different than the parties I'm used to going to. Mm-hmm. It was what I saw first before I even heard you. It's what I saw. And that's what happened to Bill. It was something that he saw before he even, ever even mentioned about not drinking. That had him curious. He knew this guy before. He knew how he looked before, but he looks different. I like that. Bill's like, what's going on? He said, come, what's this all about? What you doing, man? He looked straight at me, simply but smilingly, and said, I got religion. Uh-oh. I was aghast. So that was it? Last summer, an alcoholic crackpot, and now I suspect that a little cracked up about religion. He had that starry-eyed look. Yes, the old boy was on fire, all right. But bless his heart, let him rant. Besides, my gin will last longer than his preaching. The funny thing is that he says, but he did no ranting. In a matter of fact way, he told how two men appeared in court, persuading the judge to suspend his commitment. They had told of a simple religious idea and a practical program of action. That was 2 months ago, and the result was self-evident. It worked. So here Bill's ready to hear this religion preaching going on. But that's not what Ebby does. Ebby does something entirely different. He says about two men showed up and helped him out and introduced him some simple stuff. Bill's interested. He had come to pass his experience along to me. What did he do? He shared his experience. He didn't tell him, you need God. We're going to teach you the word of God and find salvation through. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not drink, Bill. You will be saved. Let me dunk you into a pool of water and you will be all right. That's not what Ebby does. Ebby begins to share his experience with Bill. If I cared to have it, I was shocked, but interested. Certainly I was interested. I had to be, for I was hopeless. Bill's in a hopeless, seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I, the alcoholic, came to you in a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And I watched you. I still watch people in the rooms. I like to watch how you talk in between your breaks. I like to see how you're sitting down eating with one another. What you do before the meeting. What do you do after the meeting? I still watch people in the rooms, more so than what's coming out of your mouth. I want to see how you interact with one another. How do you look when nobody's looking at you? See, I don't trust nobody. So I want to see, do you still look just as peaceful and relaxed when nobody's paying attention? Or do you come in the room smiling, yeah, it's all good, I'm not drinking, yay, and then you turn around, you're like, oh my God. I think I'm gonna die. I need proof. He talked for hours. Childhood memories rose before me. So here, Evie's sharing his experience. And as he's sharing his experience, Bill is identifying because his memories are coming up for him. I could almost hear the sound of the preacher's voice as I sat. On still Sundays, way over there on the hillside, there was that Proffered temperance pledge I never signed. I'm not signing up for that one. My grandfather's good-natured contempt of some church folk and their doings, his instances that the spheres really had their music, but his denial of the preacher's right to tell him how he must listen, his fearlessness as he spoke of these things just before he died. These recollections welled up from the past, and they made me swallow hard. That wartime day in the old Winchester Cathedral came back again. As Ebby's talking, he's identifying, but he's also identifying because Ebby talked about, I got religion. And he's sharing about his experience, his spiritual experience. And Bill's trying to identify with his relationship with God, with church, with country, with... He's trying to wrap his head around all that.
He's spinning.
Yeah, he's spinning. What even allows him to even think about that is still this glowing look on his face, and there's something different in his eyes. Mm-hmm. That's the depth and weight. Yeah. That even though what you're saying is not quite comfortable for me, I'm still interested.
Yeah.
That's two. That's step two. That's step two. The possibility. Even though I have prejudices, even though I have fears, I have issues, I have past experiences about it, I'm interested. Because I'm in a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And that's where hope begins in two. I now have hope. I now begin to have hope to the possibility that just maybe things could be different. He says, I had always believed in a power greater than myself. I had often pondered these things. I was not an atheist. Few people really are. For that means blind faith in the strange proposition that this universe originated in a cipher and aimlessly rushed nowhere. My intellectual heroes, the chemists, the astronomers, even the evolutionists suggested vast laws and forces at work. Despite contrary indications, I had little doubt that a mighty purpose and rhyme underline all. How could there be so much of precise and innumerable law and no intelligence? I simply had to believe in a spirit of the universe who knew neither time nor limitation, but that was as far as I had gone. So Bill says, I'm not an atheist. I believed in something. I believe that this world came from somewhere, somehow. He's starting to open up his mind a little bit and think of the possibilities. What is this relationship with a higher power? What is my relationship with religion? He's even questioning that, where perhaps before he never even thought of it, never even occurred to him. How is it this drunk has another drunk walk through the door and has this man thinking about something that he ain't never thought about before? How is it that I come into this room and had not been thinking about my relationship with religion, with God, with anything greater than me, and I come in here and all of a sudden I begin thinking about it? Even examining it, questioning it, reflecting upon it. I find that amazing. Even when my old prejudice come up, I think that's important. That means I'm considering something. Mm-hmm. I'm weighing out, right? I'm kind of going, what was my religious beliefs? Oh, that God I had was brimstone and fire. I was going to burn in hell. Ooh, that's spooky. Is that the one they're talking about? Mm-hmm. Even there's growth. Because I'm even asking myself those questions. They're important. That's what Bill's doing. This is part of Bill's experience with step two. And he doesn't even know it. That's funny. He says, I always believed in one. Then later on he says, with ministers in the world of religion, I parted right there. When they talked of a God personal to me, who was love, superhuman strength, and direction, I became irritated, and my mind snapped shut against such a theory. I like how he says that. When they talked about that, he says, my mind snapped shut. He no longer had an open mind. As soon as I started talking about it, he was like, oh, sorry. Disregard, disregard, disregard.
Yeah.
Don't listen, don't listen. I want to go down to page 11. This is the third paragraph. Because he says, but my friend sat before me and he made the point blank declaration that God had done for him what he could not do for himself. His human will had failed. Doctors had pronounced him incurable. Society was about to lock him up. Like myself, he had admitted complete defeat. Step one. Then he had, in effect, been raised from the dead, suddenly taken from the scrap heap to a level of life better than the best he had ever known. Had this power originated in him? Obviously, it had not. There had been no more power in him than there was in me at that minute. And this was none at all. And he says, that floored me. I began to look as though religious people were right after all. Here was something at work in a human heart which had done the impossible. My ideas about miracles were drastically revised right then. Never mind the musty past. Here sat a miracle directly across the kitchen table. He shouted, great tidings. That's two. Came to believe that a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. How is that possible unless I've seen it in you? That's the only way that happens. Bill saw it in Ebby. That opened up to the possibility. Even though his mind closed shut, even though he had past prejudices, even though he didn't come from that, he couldn't negate the fact that his buddy that he drank with and he seen him drunk was no longer drunk and said it had something to do with a power greater than himself. It floored him as it floored me. If you're powerless, as I am powerless, and you're saying that you're no longer in that place because it had something to do with something greater than you, I want to find out what that is. Despite my prejudices, I want to know what that is. Only another drunk can do that for me. I've been to church. I've heard preachers. I've heard religious people. That didn't capture my attention. It was the depth and weight, as the doctor said, that will only capture the interest of an alcoholic like me. It was another drunk. Says, I saw that my friend was much more than inwardly reorganized. He was on a different footing. Its roots grasped in a new soil. Despite the living example of my friend, there remained in me the vestiges of my old prejudices. The word God still aroused a certain antipathy. When the thought was expressed that there might be a God personal to me, this feeling was intensified. I didn't like the idea. I could go for such conceptions as creative intelligence, universal mind, or spirit of nature, but I resisted the thought of the czar of the heavens, however loving his sway might be. I had since talked with scores of men who felt the same way. That lets me know I'm not alone. So that when I came here, and the same things that came up for me listening to Bill tells me that's okay too. It's only normal that I would do that. Because that's my experience. My experience told me that there can't be anything out there that's greater than me. No higher power, no God, no religion. Nothing ever helped me before. I didn't see anything spiritual about it. I didn't see no light about it. I see more wars caused as a result of it. I've seen more harm done. Monsignor Murphy was drunk all the time. No one helped me. I don't quite see how this is going to work. But is it possible? He says, my friend suggested what then seemed a novel idea. He said, why don't you choose your own conception of God? What's conception? Oh, sorry.
Keep looking at me. You're getting used to it.
We switch.
Oh,
and we're going to do questions in a minute.
I forgot my job, too.
What's conception?
Can I help you? I need a mind or something.
No, we want to ask Webster. Remember, you're supposed to leave your resume and your IQ at the door.
Yeah.
Did you pick it up during lunch?
Conception. Act or instance of conceiving.
So what's conceive?
Conceive.
This says act of conceiving. I want
act
to see what...
Act or instance of conceiving. I hate it when they use the word in the definition.
You see conceive?
Conceive, become pregnant, imagine, formulate.
Become pregnant, imagine, or formulate.
Act or instance of formulating.
Act or instance of formulate. So I get to formulate whatever I want. That's all Evie says to Bill. Don't trip. Don't get caught up in that. Don't get caught up in your old ideas of your relationship with higher power, with church, with religion. Don't even trip. What have you come up with your own? Do you know when they told me that, I was talking about it last night, my first conception of a higher power for me was fat, told dirty jokes, farted, and stuck his finger up his nose. And nobody here could tell me that I couldn't have that as a higher power. I didn't come from a family that allowed me to have my own conception of anything. Everything was imposed upon me, whether it is to have faith or no faith. What they told me here is to have one of your own, whatever that is. You start out with a blank canvas and pick something. You just need to know that there is one and it ain't you. That's what they told me. How do we know that there is one? Because I'm looking at a miracle right now. You. And you were telling me that you didn't do this yourself. And I believe you. Why do I believe you? Because you are me and I am you. I don't believe homeboy about it's disgusting and you kiss me and I don't like it. About the cigarettes. I don't believe him. I think if you find a really, really cute girl, he'll kiss her anyway. Even if she has cigarette smoke in her mouth, he'll work it out. I don't believe him. But I believe you. I believe you when you tell me how much you smoked and what you went through and what happened and how you're not doing it anymore. I believe you. I believe you. And you said you applied certain things to make that happen. And you know, I haven't done those things, but I'll do them because I want what you got. I come here out of desperation. It says we're driven into Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not stopping by for like a little field trip. I've exhausted all of my options. I have tried every imaginable remedy. Everything. But I haven't tried this. You say my own conception? Is that what you're telling me? Is that what you're saying? Come up with my own? Do that? Okay. I'm desperate. What harm could it cause me, really? What's going to happen if I come up with a concept of God? I'm going to explode or something? You haven't exploded. You're sober and you're happy. So I could stay stuck on my prejudices or whatever it was I wasn't taught or not taught, or I could try something new and see what happens. I just might get what you got. He said, this statement hit me hard. It melted the icy intellectual mountain in which and whose shadow I had lived and shivered many years. Well, I like that. Mm-hmm. I stood in the sunlight at last. Wow. Yeah. Love that.
Wow, that's right.
It was only a matter of being willing, is what it tells me. It was only a matter of being willing. To believe in a power greater than myself, nothing more was required of me to make a beginning. Remember they told me step one is the only one I need to do perfectly. Because when I'm thorough on one and I am convinced with my innermost self that I am truly alcoholic, I'm down to do whatever. I am not that picky. That's why most people come in and get real picky. We go, you ain't done. Oh, I won't do that. I don't think that's a good idea. I'm not real comfortable with that. That doesn't work for me. Oh, keep coming back. We love you anyway. I ain't mad at you. Go have one for me. When I've exhausted everything, I ain't even talking. When I got here, I had nothing to talk about. I was tired. I had no more ideas. I couldn't even bounce anything off of you. I was just like, okay. Sit down. All right. Get a higher power. Okay. I mean, whatever, man. I'm tired. I've got nothing in the suggestion box. It's empty. Oh, my goodness. It said I saw that growth could start from that point. Upon a foundation of complete willingness, I might build what I saw in my friend. Would I have it? Of course I would. That's true. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. People get that step really confused. We believe that that step says that I'm restored to sanity right now. Everybody comes supposed to be sane. It doesn't say that. That it could. Sanity does not return. Actually, it tells me that in the book until 10. And step 10, it says, sanity has now returned. That's what people don't look for it in 2. It's the hope that carries me through the rest of the steps. Ebby tells him, you don't have to take it in all at once. Tells me later in the 12 and 12, you don't have to take the step all at once. Just have an open mind and just be willing to the possibility that just maybe there's something. Is it possible you could just do that? Sure, why not? Why not? That's 2. 2 is quite simple. They have a whole chapter in Chapter to the Agnostics. Chapter to the Agnostics, basically all it talks about is that I've always believed in something. Stop lying to myself, acting like I haven't. That's what Chapter to the Agnostics is telling me. Yeah. You've believed in something. Whether it's you believed in reason. You believed in intellect. I believe that when I turn the key to my car, it's going to go. I love how it talks about electricity. Yeah. When I walk in the door, I flip the switch. I know the light's coming on unless I didn't pay my bill. I don't have to figure out the electrons and how that works and who's really getting the electricity going and is it really, really electricity and where's it coming from. And I don't go through all that. I push the button. And I rely on that. Tells me I need to have reliance on something. And the best example that helped me with two is that I relied on something that was beyond my explanation. There are neurons and electrons. There's all kinds of things going on around us. We don't know that. You sitting on that chair. How you know it's not going to fall down? You going to tell me you don't believe that that chair is not going to hold you up? You think you holding yourself up? It's in the little things that I begin to look at and say, I believe in something. I believe this chair is going to hold me. So therefore, this idea that I don't believe in something greater than me is a lie. I believe that alcohol is going to help me. That's greater than me. I believe that a relationship is going to help me. I believe in money. I believe in a lot of things that I within myself cannot do. So if that's the case, then why is it so difficult for me to believe that there's something else out there that's going to help me to stay sober? That maybe is not so tangible. It talks about reliance upon something greater. I find independence when I become dependent on something greater than me. And I use electricity as the example. I become independent when I turn the lights on. I rely on the lights. But I'm not a puppet. The lights don't micromanage my life. I don't turn on the lights and the lights tell me, now go to the room. You can cook now. Doesn't do that. Once I turn on this power, this switch, I have to plug. I gotta tap in. I gotta tap into the power. Once I turn on the switch, the lights illuminate and I can go wherever I want. I could go to any room I want. I can watch television. I can listen to music. I can cook food. I can do all kinds of things. Once I turn on that power, how beautiful is that? Have I not been relying on electricity? And you're going to tell me that all of a sudden I'm going to come here and get picky and choosy about what I rely on? Now I'm going to get all caught up in, oh, no, there is no such thing as higher power. No, God. I'm like, oh, stop it. Just stop it. I've relied on worse. I've put my total reliance and dependence on things far uglier than something so beautiful that you say you have found. I have relied on people, places, things, money, situations so deep that I've sold my soul to it. And all of a sudden I come here and you tell me that this is something that is beautiful, it's magnificent, it's huge, and it's changed your life beyond your wildest dreams, and all of a sudden I want resistance to that? I'm like, oh no, I'd rather just go into the pit of insanity and death and stay blocked and close-minded. Thank you very much. I'd rather do that. We're so defiant. I was tired. So therefore, I was willing. Bill was tired. He was hopeless, and he was willing. He was willing to listen to the possibility. In the 12 and 12, it tells me that it's easier for the agnostic and the atheist than it is the man of faith. Because the agnostic and the atheist has a blank canvas. You've got no prejudices. You begin with nothing. You come in with nothing. So therefore, it can go anywhere. I come in with faith, with a religious practice. I got baggage. I come in with issues. Trust issues. You see what I'm saying? I come in with issues. I got to let go of those issues. I got to let go of those ideas, those old ideas, those horrible ideas, things that I experienced and witnessed. That's what Bill had to do. I've seen bad things in religion. Horrible things. Horrible. I gotta let that go? How is that possible? According to the religion that I come from, I'm gonna burn in hell. I'm a sinner. What? You're asking me to go back to that? How do I separate my experience from before and bring in something fresh and new? How am I supposed to do that? What do you think? You. I'm going to believe in what you believe in. I'm going to work from yours. Let's work with your higher power. I like yours better. That's what I did. I like yours better. I like the group. The group as a whole is bigger than me. I can go with that. That's tangible. I can see that. I'll go with the group. Let's just start with that and see where it goes. What a beautiful thing. Oh, I love that. Any questions? On two? Questions, questions. Anything, anything. Your struggles with two. How you understand two. What you fight with on that. With yourself. Your disease, what it tells you. What does it tell you about two? Oh, don't listen to those people. Higher power. It's ridiculous. Yes.
I started with, I think that the group is bigger than me.
And how that worked for you?
Yeah, really good.
So, did it grow from there, or did you just stay with the group? Okay.
No, it grew from there. But I started with the group is bigger than me. Because later I think I'm the biggest.
That's right. My man.
Before.
I did too. I'm the biggest thing.
Yeah. But the group is bigger. That's
well. Nice. In agnostics it says, deep down inside every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. They give me a hint of where I find this higher power. Deep down inside, every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. Do you know that it's within me? It's within me. Chapter 4. Yes. It's within me. That's why I see it in you. That's why I see it in you. Yes.
My inner me doesn't tell me, well, you're bigger than that. My inner me tells me, you're too small. Do you really want this? Can you fly? And I'm so scared to not succeed.
That's normal. Join the club. Hey! That's not so unusual. That's not so unusual. We've all felt that way. I felt that way. I'm not going to exceed. What's the reason for me not feeling that I'm not going to succeed and I'm not worthy? My past experiences. My experiences in life have told me that I'm not worthy. And that there isn't really anything else out there bigger than me that's going to help me, because it hasn't helped me till now. And that there is no success from where I come from. Everything in my life has been a complete failure. Why would this be any different? The beauty of this program, it says, you know what? You can think like that and you can feel like that, but do the work anyway. That's what it tells me. Don't listen to that. Don't rely on that. Rely on something bigger than you. And we are bigger than you, and we're doing something despite that. We're doing the work anyway. And that will change. And that will pass. But I had to keep doing the work. That's why I would tell myself to shut up. I say, shut up. You're trying to kill me. You're a liar. Leave me alone. I'm going with these people. I've gone with a lot of people in my life. I'm going with a different crowd today. You know? And eventually that changed. And it no longer became true for me. How did that change? How did that no longer become true for me? I had new experiences. I had new experiences that I didn't fail. And I was able to do something. Do you see what I'm saying? I had to change my experiences. I had experiences that said I was worthy. So today I can say I'm worthy because I got experiences that tell me that. I can change because I have. Things are possible because I've seen it. You know what I'm saying? So I held on to somebody else's experience of it being different, which is two. It could restore me to sanity because it restored you. So I'm going to hold on to you. Because you have been restored to sanity. You feel a sense of worthiness. You've tapped into a source of power. So let me hold on to you. I don't have it. I don't have it. But you do. That's why I follow people around. I hung out with people in the rooms. I didn't hang out with nobody else but people in the rooms. I followed you for coffee. I love the meeting after the meeting. I do a lot of meetings after the meeting. Come early, stay late. Help put up the chairs and sweep the floors. I was never taught to go to a meeting, show up, you know, late and take a seat and leave early. Oh, no. I didn't do that when I was drinking. I got there early to make sure I didn't miss nothing. Did whatever possible so that I could be included and you didn't leave me out of the loop because I'm nosy. And I stayed late. I stayed late. I do that in the meetings. I remember when we would shake hands and let go, I was scared. Because you were the source of power. You were the group was holding me and supporting me. And then I was by myself. When we let go of hands, and I felt the disease was waiting for me out in the bushes. Where do I go now? It's going to get me. So I'd be like, where are you people going? I want to hang out with y'all. I wish we could rub it and get it like osmosis, but it don't quite happen like that. But if I follow you and I do what you do and I listen to you, then just maybe I might begin to have new experiences. You'll have new experiences if you keep coming back and doing the work. If you keep listening to yourself, I was taught, no, you won't. You'll keep perpetuating that truth for yourself. You know what I'm saying? Any more questions? When do we take a break?
At 3:30.
Okay. I'm watching the time.